looming work requirements for some Medicaid recipients could put more vulnerable patients at risk. A new art exhibit looks at time and how its passage affects our lives. And we celebrate National Puppy Day with a look at one Northwest Arkansas woman's quest to foster as many furry friends as possible. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. This summer, Arkansas will begin implementing new federal work requirements for Medicaid recipients. Penalties for not fulfilling the requirements won't begin until January of next year, but the state's Department of Human Services will begin enforcing requirements for adults enrolled in the expanded Medicaid program as early as July 1st. Registered Arkansans between ages 19 and 64 must work, volunteer, or go to school for at least 20 hours a week, unless exempt. One exemption left out is those living with HIV. Carl Schmidt is executive director of the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute and says nationwide, 40% of people with HIV rely on Medicaid. He tells KUAF's Daniel Carruth this oversight could be detrimental for the nearly 6,000 Arkansans who have HIV.
And it's not like we're against work. I think people should be able to, if they can, they should work, volunteer, or whatever. But it's just such, the way the legislation was written, it's black and white. If you do not work and you are on Medicaid, and this is expanded Medicaid, the people that got on through the Affordable Care Act, then you're gone. You will not be covered by Medicaid. And we cannot risk that for people living with HIV. They cannot risk losing the access to their health care. So what we're asking for, there are exemptions in the law. And Arkansas, is implementing the law pretty quickly. And there are exemptions for people like with disabilities. And that means, people with full-blown AIDS, that's a disabling condition, they're exempt. But there's also an exemption for, caregivers and also for people who have a serious or chronic condition. And we feel that HIV should automatically qualify for that. So that's what we're asking the state to, instead of, ask people, every individual person having to ask for the exemption, we would like a blanket exemption.
Well, I know that we saw, I think in 2018, there were work requirements added, and it was about 18,000 people lost that coverage. Can you talk a bit about the impact of that and how difficult it is for someone to maybe, who has these health conditions, having to also go and try and get an exemption and work around these kind of complicated bureaucratic systems?
Yeah, and, and also one thing I want to underscore is if people with HIV are not going to change. Once you have HIV, you have it forever. And so why do you have to keep on getting, recertified like every 6 months or something? And just be, you should be able to through, if you're on HIV drugs, you should be able to just, the state knows that. And they should be able to just exempt people. But having all these barriers has resulted in people losing coverage. And that's not good. When people fall out of care, they become sick, and it actually costs the healthcare system more money in the long run because people end up going into the hospital. We do have, we're very fortunate that there is a fallback program for people living with HIV called the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program that does provide drugs and treatment and healthcare for low-income people. But that program is really struggling right now. And we haven't seen an increase in the program for the drug component of it since 2013, That's 13 years ago. And so we're in states, they're reducing eligibility. So it's a bad situation out there. It's not good for people. And it's not good for our public health as well.
And, you know, Arkansas, we had 400 new HIV infections in 2022. You know, we have one of the highest rates here in the country. Can you talk a little bit about who is impacted mostly by HIV? And for people, it's sort of fallen off the radar of things that we talk about. I feel like we don't speak as much about HIV and about prevention now that there have been advancements in medicine. But can you talk a little bit about why it still is a risk and who is most at risk?
Yeah. So there's around 6,000 people living with HIV in Arkansas. The people, you know, primarily impacted are lower income people, African-Americans, Latinos, gay men. And, you know, still, you know, around a quarter of all people living with HIV are women, particularly Black women. And, you know, in Arkansas is in the South, and we're seeing, you know, most of the new infections in this country are in the South because people don't talk about these issues anymore. People are not dying like they used to in the 80s and 90s. But we cannot forget about them, and we have to, you know, be vigilant in both our making sure people have treatment, and people are living longer too, you know, because of the treatment. People are getting older. And but also we have to be we want to prevent HIV as well. And so we have new drugs called PrEP that we're trying to get to more and more people. Again, it, you know, it seems like a lot of white males are getting access to those drugs, but not Black and Latino, you know, men and women. And so we have to focus both on treatment and prevention. We need leadership from our government and both the state and local governments, because we cannot, you know, forget about HIV. If we do, you know, we're just going to see the new infections rise.
When these sorts of requirements and these barriers pop up, I mean, does that hurt sort of the prevention element as well? Does it limit access to those types of drugs too?
Yeah, so the Medicaid work requirements, yes, would impact access to preventive drugs as well. And, you know, actually, we've done an analysis of the people. As I said, there's 40%. Medicaid is the biggest payer for HIV treatment. But also, if you look at the eligible population of people who are eligible for PrEP that should be on PrEP, Medicaid is the biggest payer. So, yes, this would also impact access to preventive drugs as well.
And I know you talked about that there are some exemptions for other types of medical conditions. What kinds of conditions are usually exempt from things like this? Or I don't know if you have that data or know that.
Yeah. You know, women who are, you know, have children at home are exempt. But, you know, in the law, they recognize mental health issues, substance use issues. So, you know, in the past, HIV has been you know, indicated as a population that could be exempt, but we don't want to fight this state by state too. You know, that's putting too many lives in jeopardy. We would like something from the national government to say this. And since Arkansas is moving forward so quickly, we need, and we submitted comments to the state, you know, to make sure that HIV is exempt. Now, Arkansas has recognized HIV as a concern in the past when they implemented work requirements. So we hope it will continue in the future, but there's a lot at risk right now.
Have you heard anything from the state so far since you submitted those requests?
No, I haven't. We know they're moving forward, though.
Gotcha.
And they said that they would exempt people with special health needs, but they didn't illustrate which ones they are.
And so for people listening to this, you know, what do people need to know? What do they need to do moving forward? What are kind of the next steps, I guess?
Yeah, well, continue to encourage the state to exempt people living with HIV from the work requirements. And, you know, they're moving forward. And so I would, you know, individuals who can get an exemption, you know, they should push for them, and to be mindful of all the communication that Medicaid recipients receive from the state, because there may be a lot of paperwork ahead and a lot of data submissions. So I think it's really important for people to pay attention to this implementation, because you do not want to lose your healthcare access.
Do you think this is kind of an oversight on Arkansas's part, or it's targeted, or why this specific, you know, issue is left out of those?
Yeah, I mean, I hope, you know, we don't give up, and I hope they are, you know, right now they're doing broad strokes, and as the rules get more clarified and get closer to the implementation date, that they will be more specific and exempt people with HIV. If not, then there's some danger on the horizon.
That was Carl Schmidt, Executive Director of the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute based in Washington, D.C. He spoke with KEYF's Daniel Carruth. The Arkansas Museum of Fine Arts in Little Rock is examining time with its latest exhibition, bringing together pieces from museums across the South. Little Rock Public Radio's Nathan Treese gives us a preview of the exhibition titled Art and the Persistence of Time.
The Arkansas Museum of Fine Arts has a new exhibit, and it's about time. The exhibit, A Month of Sundays, Art and the Persistence of Time, explores several aspects of time and its effects on our lives. While the exhibit's theme is pinned to a universal experience, curator Jennifer Jankowskis reminds us that the essence of time remains relative.
Time is something that's so personal to everyone, how we experience it, and really elusive. It's hard to pin down. So in thinking about the exhibition, we wanted to approach it from all sorts of different ways.
Central to the exhibit is a sense of intentional pause, or slow time. Works such as Richard Yard's The Stoop invite visitors to share a moment of rest amongst the hectic urban sprawl. George Segal's Woman on a Bench may reflect to visitors a moment of respite following a long day of obligations.
We very rarely take the time just to be. And I think being in a museum, this is something that we hope people do all the time, that they come in here and interact with the works on view, not just in this exhibition, but throughout the museum, and put a pause on their life.
Duration is another tenet of time emphasized within the space, the time it takes to both create art and to absorb the work as an audience. To that end, AMFA invited artist Tim Ewood for a performance piece, part of his 100 Novels project. Ewood is on a quest to retype 100 novels live on a single sheet composed of two layers of paper. He does this at a venue tied to the book's history, using the same typewriter model as the original author. The resulting piece is a diptych that Ewood says mirrors both form and essence.
They are formal drawings. They are time-based drawings. They're made over time in a very specific way. And I see them as perhaps a metaphor for what happens to our brains when we read closely. Like there's something biochemically that leaves a mark inside of us, you know, somewhere in our brain on some cells that we can kind of conjure up, but we don't necessarily remember all the words.
For Ewood, it's a meditative exercise. These are books he's read and which have shaped his worldview in some way.
I want to spend time with that book. That doesn't mean I have to love it. I mean, it might mean that I have some questions about it going into it, but I have to feel like it's a book that was written with the intention of wanting somebody to really read it close.
For his time visiting Arkansas, Ewood is retyping Charles Portis's landmark Southern novel, True Grit, which is a novel both shaped by memory and the passage of time.
True Grit is actually kind of a grim story that he allows us to experience by giving us plenty of deadpan, dry humor that takes us through sort of this journey into Old Testament vengeance, and is told, importantly, 30 years or so later by Maddie Ross, when she's a middle-aged or late middle-aged woman who's lived her life, a fairly solitary life, after this great adventure.
True Grit will be his 87th retyped novel, and in the same way that his deliberate, slow re-examinations have reshaped his view of each story, the duration of the project has reshaped his view of life.
I'm going to die with books unread, you know, and that's a realization that's occurred to me over the course of my retyping. And so as I've gone from starting in middle age to now where I am, maybe almost at the beginning of older age, I value each retyping, I think, that much more because I want to see where I land on that book in my life, knowing that that might be the last time I get to touch it.
A hook bone rising from my food, and all things either good or ungood.
Just beyond the meditative slowness of the introductory works, Art and the Persistence of Time faces us with the cruelty of time. Johnny Cash's The Mercy Seat permeates the far side of the gallery, emanating from a work in Jefferson Pinder's Juke series. Curator Jankowskis details the video installation in which Sean, a black man, lip-syncs the song in its entirety.
How it relates to this exhibition is, of course, that idea of waiting and marking your last days, and if you're incarcerated and on death row. Also, thinking about, you know, the mass incarceration of young black men. And so all of these things are wrapped up into this one piece that is incredibly powerful.
A Month of Sundays, Art and the Persistence of Time, is nothing if not contemplative. Many of the works on display evoke a sense of restfulness and nostalgia, as well as an appreciation of time's paradoxical permanence and fleetingness. It is cosmic with a southern lilt. It only takes about an hour to take it all in, but Jankowskis says it may leave a lasting impression.
Really appreciate what these artists are doing and maybe gain a new perspective because they may present something in a way that we hadn't thought about before that makes us take stock about how we're living our lives and engaging with time. And, you know, I just hope that everybody comes out and enjoys the exhibition.
Artist Tim Ewood will be at the museum for the remainder of the week. He plans to have True Grit retyped by March 28th. On the whole, AMFA's Timely exhibit opened on February 19th and runs through September 6th, which, yes, for anyone keeping count, gives you about a month of Sundays to check it out.
That was Little Rock Public Radio's Nathan Treese reporting. This past Monday was National Puppy Day. Sorry, cat lovers, your time is coming soon enough. And to help celebrate the joyous occasion, KUAF's Jack Travis reached out to Lori Comer, who over the past few years has fostered over 100 puppies. She says this era of her life started on Facebook, connecting with Best Friends Animal Society, a no-kill animal shelter with a Northwest Arkansas location in Bentonville.
The first time was in October of 2023, and I have a room in my home that I called my project room. And I was working in that room that day, and I looked at Facebook and saw where Best Friends had posted an urgent plea for one mama and one puppy that needed a foster home. And I thought, I have the space. Surely I can do this one time, because I was always concerned about getting too emotionally attached. And thought I wouldn't be able to do it. So I reached out to them. Short version, I became a foster.
Lori Comer says she didn't initially see herself as a foster home for puppies, but she can't imagine her life any other way now. And she encourages others to just try it once. You can start small. Best Friends Animal Society allows people to take a dog for a day, a few hours, an overnight, or a weekend. And if you decide to foster puppies, 101 or 1, Comer has some advice. In fact, that is her first piece of wisdom. Start small. And puppy-proof your house. Seriously.
I put up a playpen. The puppies don't just run my house. They have their special space. I put up a puppy playpen. Mama can go in and out of that playpen. And then I put linens down for the puppies. And then I place a bed outside of the playpen for Mama for when she wants to get away from them. Because, I mean, when you've got 8, 10, 12 babies, those mamas need a break too.
The puppy gate serves a dual purpose. It places a barrier between these teething, overly needy puppies, mother dogs, and your furniture. Comer also recommends putting a puppy pad, those white flat diaper things, in the pen with the pups so they can start the crate training process early. That leads to her next point, your part in this process. Comer says foster parents have the responsibility of getting puppies socialized before they can be adopted. Socializing puppies is obviously a big lift.
Typically, every evening, I will go sit with my litter of puppies. And literally, I sit in the floor with the puppies and just play with them. If they want to be held, if they want to be in my lap, or play with them with the toys when they're learning, hey, this is something fun. And just petting them, getting them used to that touch all over their body. And just, I call it socializing. Because otherwise, if they're just left in the corner by themselves, they might know how to interact with another puppy, but they might be afraid to interact with a human. So they need all of that exposure.
Comer emphasizes how rewarding fostering animals can be, baby or otherwise. She says you can make fostering work for you and your availability.
It's a fantastic way for people who love animals but aren't in a place in their life where they can make the full lifetime commitment, but they can commit for a day, a week, a month, or however long it takes for that dog to get adopted.
Goodbyes can be hard, but Comer says she reminds herself of her place in this puppy's life.
I'm not going to say I've never shed tears, because I have. But what I realized and what has brought me to this place where I've fostered over 100 now is the whole rescue fostering world is a village. And everyone in that village has a specific piece of the road, so to speak, that's their assignment. So there has to be someone watching the shelters, someone tagging the ones that are going to be pulled. Someone has to drive to get them. Someone has to vet them when they come back or when they get them here in Northwest Arkansas. And then that's where the foster steps in.
That was Lori Comer speaking with KUAF's Jack Travis. You can find more information about fostering online at bestfriends.org. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.